I'm Matěj Skalický and this is Czech Radio News Podcast Vinohradská 12. Lukashenko wants to hold Ukrainian-Russian peace talks in Minsk. Is it realistic? Debates continue in the US about Radio Free Europe. How important is this news outlet for Belarusians? And will the leader of the Belarusian opposition move to Prague? I will ask Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya herself. It's Saturday, April 5th. Hi, Svetlana. Thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Hello, everyone.
So it has been a few weeks since President Alexander Lukashenko invited Putin, Trump and Zelensky to Belarus. How realistic is his idea of holding peace negotiations somewhere in Minsk?
So first of all, let's don't call people president if he is not. Lukashenko is not president. He's a person who seized power in Belarus and doesn't represent Belarusian people. As for peace talks, Lukashenko offering to host peace talks, it is pure theater. He cannot be a mediator. He is a co-aggressor in this war. Let's not forget that Russian troops invaded Ukraine from Belarusian territory and missiles were launched from our land and nuclear weapons are now stationed in Belarus. Lukashenko helped start this war, so he cannot pretend to help end it. Mm-hmm. Also, peace talks in Minsk are not realistic. No one trusts Lukashenko. He's fully dependent on Putin and he speaks only with his approval. So his goal is not peace, it is survival. But what Belarusian people want, you know, from these talks, you know, peace talks, end of the war and the end to dictatorship in Belarus, peaceful Ukraine, free Belarus. And I truly believe that without free Belarus, there is no lasting peace in the region. So I encourage our Western friends, Belarus is not just a problem. It can be also part of solution, but not in the case of Lukashenko.
Lukashenko himself allegedly wouldn't want to be a mediator in peace talks. But how much does the Belarusian regime currently want Putin to stop the military attacks on Ukraine, if so? Especially since rockets and drones are flying over Belarusian territory and sometimes crash on Belarusian territory as well.
Look, this war, Russian-Ukrainian war, was a blessing for Lukashenko because since 2020, so many sanctions have been imposed on Lukashenko's regime and emptied his pockets a lot. But when the war has started, he militarized our economy. He reoriented civic enterprises to produce military stuff for Russian war. They're producing optics, you know, different details for weapon. So he's earning money on the lives of Ukrainians. So it's not in his interest, you know, to stop this war. It's his economic survival. So that's why I say that Lukashenko cannot be mediator because he takes benefits, you know, from this war.
The US President Trump is trying to push Russia and Ukraine to agree to ceasefire. So what effect would such a forced agreement have on Belarus?
Look, I truly believe that President Trump wants to achieve peace and his efforts are important. And obviously no one wants peace more than Ukraine. But the problem is Putin. He's not ready even for a ceasefire. He doesn't want peace. He wants the war to continue because it fuels his regime. Putin will lie, he will delay, he will make empty promises, but it will lead nowhere. And the West must not fall into this trap. We have seen time and time again that Putin doesn't respect agreements. He uses these talks to buy time, you know, to weaken Western unity and continue his aggression. And any dialogue with him must be based on clear principles, respect for international law and accountability for war crimes. The only way to force Putin to real negotiations is through pressure, stronger sanctions and more support for Ukraine. And I'm sure that finally we will come to negotiations, you know, because all the wars end with peace sooner or later. But at that moment, Ukraine must be at the strongest position. And my hope is that President Trump and the Europe will provide Ukraine with everything it needs. You know, peace must be just and must be long-lasting. For that, Ukraine must receive security guarantees. We must ensure that after the ceasefire, the war will not start again in Ukraine or even broader in Europe. So, and Putin, of course, must bear consequences for if he violates any agreement.
Svetlana, a personal question, if you will. I follow you on Twitter, and you wrote a few days ago a heartbreaking post that you haven't received a single message from your imprisoned husband in 2 years. Does this mean that you don't know anything about him at all?
It's a pity, but it's truth. My husband is almost 5 years in prison, and for 2 years, since March, I haven't heard any news from him at all. Nothing. My children don't get letters. You know, a lawyer is not allowed to visit him. We call it incommunicado mode. And there are up to 10 people who are held incommunicado. So we are not even sure if these people are alive. And the regime is hiding these people. We don't know in which prisons they are. So it's a type of torture.
Tell me, your husband faces how many years in prison? 18 in total?
19 and a half.
19 and a half. So another 14 years now.
Yeah, it's like on paper, it's like this. But, you know, our task is to make everything possible to release people as fast as we can. Because people are literally dying in prisons. People are held in inhuman conditions. And there are so many political prisoners who are in very dire physical and emotional conditions. Mm. And they cannot survive this torturance.
The Belarusian regime claims that he was imprisoned for advocating the violent overthrow of the Belarusian government. Is there a way to get more information about him, to connect with him?
It's lawlessness in our country. So it's impossible to reach our political prisoners if there is direct order from illegitimate regime, you know, to keep prisoners in isolation. But I'm sure that only publicity can make this regime to change their behavior. So I think that international organizations, institutions who have mandate to work with cases like this, like incommunicado, political prisoners, tortures in prisons, have to be more vocal and more public about this, like Red Cross, Human Rights Council. I think that the issue of political prisoners in Belarus has to be discussed on the UN General Assembly, because Lukashenko is hiding our people, our prisoners in his crimes behind like bigger problems, you know, like the war in Ukraine, like Eastern crises. But it's also about humans. It's about human rights abuses. This is what UN is responsible for. So if there is such a tactic that, okay, they send some letters with the questions to illegitimate regime and response and get a response that, look, we don't have political prisoners, it shouldn't satisfy human rights organizations, worldwide organizations. And they have to do it publicly. They have to demand access to political prisoners. Red Cross might be much more active than they are now. Mm. And of course, political attention of the democratic world is essential in this crisis. Lukashenko wants the world to forget about Belarusian people, about Belarusian's fight. And our task is not let this happen.
There were no Belarusian political prisoners included in the Great Prisoner Exchange last year between US and Russia. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, of course, it's one venue that might be investigated, but the problem is that Lukashenko doesn't have people who may be in foreign prisons that are dear to him and whom they want to release. So we don't have this people for exchange in our Belarusian. So, of course, we are exploring this venue, and if such exchanges with Russia will take place in the future, you know, we don't know about this, but if so, we are asking our democratic partners who are dealing with these processes, you know, to demand to include Belarusian political prisoners as well.
Tell me, the Belarusian regime has sentenced you to 15 years in prison. Do you ever think that you may never be able to return home? Because if you do, you'll end up behind bars.
I have to say that I strongly believe that we will return home and that Belarus will be free. We will not give up whomever. And this is what keeps me going, actually. I never planned to be a politician. You know, I was wife, mother, but I hadn't a choice when my husband was jailed. Of course, I miss my hope. I miss people. I miss my motherland. But I know that I must continue this fight, you know, for my children, for Sergei, for every Belarusian dreaming of freedom. And that's why, you know, I'm so proud that Belarusian people in this fight are keeping united. People on the ground, though, cannot resist openly at the moment. They're providing us information about what's happening in Belarus. People from Lukashenko's structures also send us sensitive information, for example, how sanctions are circumvented or which enterprises produce military staff, you know, to put these enterprises under sanctions. And in exile, we build strong structures. United's Transitional Cabinet, Coordination Council, we have international alliances. On our Freedom Day, we received statements of support from all over the world. Also, we help political prisoners, their families. We speak out in international forums, and we prepare for the transition to democracy. Our message is clear. You know, we are not looking for enemies, you know, in Belarusian structures. We are looking for possibilities for dialogue between regime and people to hold free and fair elections and stop this humanitarian and political crisis in Belarus.
Can you please elaborate on that? How hard is the fight for freedom from the exile? Are the Western officials listening to you? How are you managing to establish and maintain some diplomatic relations?
It's much easier to fight for freedom when you own freedom, you know, when you're not in jail. So, of course, working from exile, it's like you're not with your people, you're not in the country, but it creates opportunities to speak about Belarus, to formalize relationship with other countries. We have so many friends all over the world, and we really managed to build like official relationship with the democratic countries. Like countries, governments, they don't send ambassadors to Minsk not to legitimize Lukashenko. They send a special envoy to work with democratic forces of Belarus. Belarusian people present everywhere. We made agreement with the European Parliament. We have strategic dialogue with the USA, Canada, and the UK. So formalization of the relationship, it's clear statement of our democratic partners that, look, we don't recognize Lukashenko, he is nobody, but we are working with democratic forces, we are trying to support them politically, supports our media, our organizations that have been liquidated in Belarus. So it's really difficult, you know, to keep focus on Belarus for 5 years in a row, but we can do this because I know that we are responsible for those people in prisons. We are responsible for the independence of our country. And I think that our democratic partners, they also understand that only democratic Belarus can be reliable partner and neighbor for them and not their source of constant threat. And while Lukashenko is in Belarus, so he's serving to Putin's interests, not to Belarusian interests. And that's why the democratic world made its clear choice. Mm-hmm. Belarusian movement, democratic forces are our partners.
By the way, where is your headquarters right now? Where are you living?
I live in Vilnius. I left Belarus in 2020, moved to Vilnius, and since then I'm based here. But of course, Poland and Lithuania are like our political centers, because most of Belarusians, first of all, live in these two countries, and Poland and Lithuania is our closest neighbors, understand the importance of supporting political structures. Mm-hmm. So since Vilnius, we are working with the other countries, and special envoys actually are sent to Vilnius, you know, to be in constant coordination with us.
I just want to explain the reason for my question, because a year ago in Prague, together with Czech Foreign Minister, you opened the office of Belarus Democratic Forces. So does this still mean that Prague could become the seat of the Belarusian exile government someday?
Look, Czech Republic is a very separate story, because for years and years, Czech Republic was supporting Belarusian democratic movement. And I remember I was told that Václav Havel, you know, before his death, you know, the last letter he wrote was to political prisoners in Belarus. He always supported us. And since then, you know, Czech Republic is our biggest allies. And the step that we opened mission of democratic forces in Czech Republic is not accidental, because it's also one of the centers of political activity. And chairwoman of this mission, Kristina Šeirnok, doing a fantastic job. You know, she's raising Belarus high on the agenda in the Czech Republic and bringing Belarusian artists, painters, inviting Belarusian military volunteers to have rehabilitation in Czech Republic. And in 2020, it was Czech Republic actually that evacuated severely wounded Belarusians who need rehabilitation. So your country is really contributing a lot into our fight, and strong partner and strong voice on the international arena, supporting our Belarusian European aspiration. And recently we opened one more mission in Tallinn, Estonia, and also we have mission in Brussels. So it's like our embassies, you know, in the different countries. And I'm grateful to Czech government and parliament for such strong support, not only in the words, but in practical steps.
But you're not considering moving to Czech Republic, to Prague?
There is no like necessity, you know, to move from country to country. You know, I'm based in Vilnius. We have wonderful Belarusian diaspora and political representatives in the Czech Republic. So there is no reason for me, you know, to move my office to Prague. But I really appreciate what your country is doing for us, and always with huge pleasure organize my political visits to Czechia.
Prague is also a place where Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is located, which also broadcasts to Belarus. There is currently a heated debate going on about the funding of RFE in the United States. Just a few days ago, the news came also that the US Supreme Court had suspended the American government's efforts to stop funding RFE. How serious would the end of this station be for Belarus and Belarusian people?
It's extremely crucial now to save the work of all Belarusian independent media, including Radio Liberty. If you talk about Radio Free Europe, so it's a lifeline actually for thousands of Belarusians. It tells the truth when others are forced to lie. You know, this radio gives hope, and some of its reporters are behind bars, but the voice of freedom keeps going. And of course, for us, Radio Liberty is a symbol of what the West stands for. And I hope that Radio Liberty will continue its work. And if not the United States, but the European Union will help them to continue their critical work.
So you would support the Czech initiative to save this media outlet?
Absolutely. I'm grateful for this proposal of Minister Lipavsky, and that Minister Sikorsky and other ministers supported this idea that we have to save this crucial outlet. Because for years and years, they broadcasted truth. And now, especially now, when actually the fate of our region is being decided, it's so important to deliver honest news inside Belarus and also all over the world. Because if Radio Free Europe and other media are shut down because lack of assistance, they will be immediately replaced with the Russian and Belarusian regime propagandistic messages. And these messages are poisoning minds, not only of Belarusians, but also minds of our Western nations. And we have no right to allow this.
And are there any other media outlets that Belarusian people can follow if they don't want to rely on television propaganda?
Look, of course, independent media in Belarus is being hunted down. All of them, you know, have been liquidated in Belarus, but managed to restore their broadcasting from abroad. But in Belarus, websites blocked, offices raided, people jailed for simply liking a post or sharing an article. But Belarusians still find ways to read the truth through VPNs, Telegram, even printed leaflets. People are hungry for facts and not propaganda. Everyday coverage of free media, Belarusian free media, is about 3 million people daily inside the country. Mm. So that's why it's important, you know, to give them opportunity to continue their work.
According to analysts, between 500,000 people and 600,000 people have left Belarus in recent years, primarily due to the political repression after 2020. Do you think that once the regime in Belarus changes, someday the majority of these people will return, or have they already put down too many roots in their new homes?
You know, since 2020, at the moment, we know about at least 500,000 people who left Belarus because of repressions. And of course, I understand that not all of them will return home because children are appearing, in different countries, and people legalize themselves in the country. So maybe new marriages happening. But what I see that most of Belarusians want to return home. And even if they stay in Europe, in the future, believe me, when the changes comes in Belarus, they will contribute, to our economic development. Businesses that also had to relocate in huge amount in since 2020, they will help Belarus to develop, to bring new investments, to bring reforms, in Belarus. So, yeah, of course, it's also Peter's story because their most experienced professionals left the country. And of course, we new Belarus, free Belarus will need all these people. Mm. So we in future will have to make conditions, to bring people back to Belarus to develop, to contribute to independence.
Can you please be more specific? What conditions? What would make people come home?
For example, if we take businesses, yes, to make conditions for them that businesses develop freely, that government doesn't interfere in entrepreneurs' work or small businesses or big businesses, because now in Belarus it's impossible to have like blossom in business because it's very dangerous. At any moment, regime can come and how they say nationalize your business if it's too benefitable for them. And as for people, if people see that there is a rule of law in Belarus, that people are protected, that it's a safe country for their children, so believe me, people will return home. And if Belarus will become very prospective from like business economic point of view, so it will attract Belarusians back.
What are your main tasks for the upcoming weeks and months in order to help imprisoned people in Belarus, in order to help to fight for freedom in Belarus? Do you keep a checklist with you?
Now it's really a decisive moment for Ukraine, but also for Belarus. We understand that it might be several scenarios at the moment. The worst case scenario is if peace talks weaken Western support for Ukraine or give Putin hope that he can divide the democratic world. And we cannot afford another reset with the Kremlin. This would only embolden Putin, prolong the war, threaten democracy itself. I fear another Yalta, where Europe is divided into sphere of influence. Peace is fragile and Belarus remains under Russian control. So that's why, in my have-to-do list is to make sure that Belarus will not remain under Russian influence. As President Zelensky told, that eastern border of Europe has to lay to the eastern border of Belarus, that Belarus is included into new European architecture, that Belarus is perceived as European country and we have to fight for European future for Belarus. So to keep Belarus in focus, to spread our narratives about democratic Belarus, that only democratic Belarus can be a reliable partner for the Western world, and democratic Belarus is in the interest not only of Belarusians, but also in the interest of Europe as well. So I want to believe to the best scenario that the West stays firm and any talks must demand the withdrawal of Russian troops from Ukraine and ensure that Belarus is not forgotten, that Russian troops leave our country as well, that nuclear weapon leaves our country as well, and Russia doesn't interfere into internal politics of Belarus. The rest we will do by ourselves. But there shouldn't be a place for overlooking Belarus in this moment, because sometimes I hear we have to deal with Ukraine and then we'll return to Belarus. It might be lost case already, or if we give Belarus's consolation prize to Putin. So we have to be prepared that there will be constant blackmails, constant threats from the territory of Belarus because Lukashenko is puppet of Putin, constant migration attacks, nuclear weapon blackmail, constant Russian-Belarusian drills, and there will be no stability and peace and calmness in the region. So free Belarus is a key to regional security and lasting peace in Europe.
Okay, thank you very much for all your answers and for your interview for Czech Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for attention. Really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
And that's all for today. I spoke with Sviatlana Tsikhanouskaya, leader of the Belarusian Democratic Opposition. Thank you for listening.